my name's the Reverend Nigel Cowgill, and I'm a London District Chair for the Methodist Church. I'm in my seventh year now.
Wow.
So I started in 2015.
And so why and what made you decide to become a reverend in the first place?
I was brought up in a Christian home in Methodism, and as I journeyed on my own life, there were some ups and downs, I could say, and people just started to encourage me to say, actually, why don't you think about becoming a local preacher? I'm dyslexic, and I didn't leave school with many qualifications at all, so I kind of dismissed those ideas, because becoming a local preacher, you had to do lots of studying, as you do now. And I eventually passed my local preacher's training, and then from one thing to another, people kept saying, well, why don't you consider candidating, which I thought was a crazy idea. But as I started doing that journey and going through the process, I think to my amazement and many other people's amazement, that I got unanimous all the way through the process. So that was a kind of confirmation that that was God wanting to say that, yes, actually the church could use you and you could be some use of the church as well.
Wonderful. And before you kind of decided to take on that journey, did you feel it was something you wanted to do? It was a passion or something you were called to do?
I think because I left school with not many exams, and so I trained as a chef, because that's one thing I could do was cook. And I think I remember saying to my mum, not long after I became a chef, I went home and I just said, I'm becoming a Methodist minister. And she kind of looked at me with raised eyebrows and more or less under her breath said, yes, okay, whatever, love. And as I journeyed on, then I did become a Methodist minister, and you know, she was at my ordination at age of 90. And it was the proudest moment for me and her as well.
Absolutely, can imagine. And then what was the kind of process like of doing all that studying then to become a Methodist minister?
I think it's really, it is a real difficult process. I certainly probably wouldn't get through the process today, in terms of writing all the portfolios, talking about your journey, theological reflection. But I think it's a very worthwhile process. Very difficult, very time consuming. And part for me was, why would they want an Asian, someone who was dyslexic, in the ministry? And I had to push a few doors in the sense of that, to say that actually I could do this, but that was with the encouragement of other people rather than myself, really.
Absolutely. And did you ever feel like, you know, you've mentioned being Asian, that you were ever prejudiced in any way to be a minister or to be part of a church?
I don't think I was prejudiced to be a minister or part of the church, but as I've, I suppose as I've continued to be a minister, I'm always conscious that quite often I'm the only non-white person in the room. And even as a district chair, I'm the only Asian district chair. We have two more black district chairs, but I was the only non-white district chair for about 3 years, I think, and always conscious that I suppose I had to push the doors. And I think part of that reasoning is that because I'm British born, my name, it sounds very English, and that people would not always recognise that there was someone of colour in the room. And I'm still having that battle at the moment. Only recently I got an email to say, we need to just make sure that people know that this is an inclusive committee because you're on it, which I thought was a quite strange email to send. But it's getting, pushing and getting at the table, which I still find difficult with.
Absolutely. And do you feel, you know, in that instance of essentially being classed as a token of, you know, you are the only non-white person?
There was one particular instance where I knew I was going to be the token non-white person. So I was president of what was Methodist Association of Youth Clubs, and I got that on my own merit. There was a vote taking place, But the year before that, there was a big event in Trafalgar Square, and we were looking at three areas of life. We were looking at racism, we were looking at homophobia, and we were looking at homelessness. And they realised that none of the leadership who were due to speak on the platform was someone of colour. And so they rang me up and said, Nigel, can you do a little speech at MAYC at the weekend on racism? And I said, why have you chosen me? And they said, well, we've just realised that we've got no one of colour. And so I turned it down.
Yeah.
Because it was very clear that they were being tokenism, and I'm comfortable in my own skin, and I don't want to be the tokenism. I want to be the person at the table because of the gifts and skills that I've got, not just because I'm non-white.
What has kind of inspired you to keep going, even through maybe instances of hardship or struggles?
I think because I love the job, and it is such a diverse job in many different ways. Yes, there are struggles, and I've personally been accused of being racist against people, but I think that actually for me it's not particularly about my colour. It's about the gifts and skills which God has given me to offer this to the church. But I do hope that when I'm in my role that I can make at least some representation of, I think, you know, the theme which the president has done this year has really hit home to me, about how some people are around the table, some people are not, don't have a place at the table for a variety of reasons. And so that's what inspires me to continue to do the role, that I have something to offer the church, but also that actually I think they've got a long way to go in terms of diversity.
Yeah. In regards to that kind of journey that they need to travel, what kind of things do you think that needs to be? Is it looking at thinking about the past and apologising for things that have happened, or is it what happens in the future with who gets certain roles or who's in the room when these roles are being decided?
Yeah, I think there's all of that. I think the church does need to apologise in certain areas of how they've treated all diversities, people with disabilities, people who are in same-sex relationships, who are black, who have suffered racism and discrimination. And I think it's really sad that we have to have a notice of motion a number of years ago at the conference which says that actually racism is not compatible to the gospel. Actually, that should be a given.
Yeah.
And we're still battling that as well. In terms of roles within the church, I think that we've got an awful lot on none of our senior leadership in terms of within the life of the church are people of colour. That may be because people don't apply, or if they do apply, they haven't got the gifts and skills. But I think actually how we look at that and how we encourage people of colour to apply for these roles and encourage them, I think we've got a long way to go. And on a number of connectional committees, and I know partly that is tokenism, but actually being in the role as a leader within the church, that makes it easier because I can say this is not about me being Asian, this is about actually you need to do this properly.
Why is diversity across, you know, different orientations, identities, why is that important in a church?
Because it's a gospel imperative that, you know, Christ came for all. We sing in our hymn book, All for Christ, you know, All for Jesus, All for, I can't remember the hymn book.
Yeah.
All for Jesus, All for Jesus. And actually, you know, one day I hope that we'll live it out. You know, we sing that aspirational hymn, All Are Welcome. Well, it's a terrible hymn, you know, because we're not. And as we need to move from the aspirational to actually saying, actually, what are we doing here? Because all the diversities right across the board bring something of themselves within the life of the church. And if you only have white people or if you only have women, or if you only have men, or if you only have gay people, or people with disabilities, on the publicity on the video, videos that we produce, that does not even begin to touch us, you know. And I remember having a conversation recently with someone saying, you know, I don't know, and they were telling me off, because they were saying, you know, but statistics say there's only 15% of non-white people in the country, and therefore, you know, the seven people on this video represents that. No, that's a load of rubbish, really. But I wasn't going to argue with them, because one thing which I'm very clear about is that actually I'm not going to be using my ethnicity, my diversity, to have spits and spats against people.
Yeah, definitely.
Because actually that's me being as bad as them.
Mm. And to kind of have to argue and prove why you should be in a space or a place.
I mean, it's exhausting walking into a room within the life of the church and you are the only person of colour. And someone sits there and makes a point of saying, oh, well, we need diversity on this committee. Or I say, we need diversity on this committee. And I find that a real struggle because I'm the only person in the room. So therefore, I'm thinking that then I'm putting my name forward. And I might not be the right person. But quite often I sit on connectional committees because I've sat in a room full of white people and I've had to say, actually, no, that working group needs someone of diversity. Well, Nigel, you can do it then. It becomes then something where, yet again, we're not allowing the right people to be doing the God-given. We're just saying that black person can be sat on that committee because it looks good. I was at the Methodist conference one year and I was with a friend who had broken a leg. And it was in the days where you all had lunch together and things like that. And somebody came up to me and said, and grabbed my arm and said, you need to have lunch with the black minister's table, I think. Now there was this guy who I was helping because he was on crutches, broken leg, I can't think. And as I reflected back on that, I thought, I have been a minister for nearly 10 years and you have taken no notice of me whatsoever. Why now?
Yeah.
Well, of course, now is because I'm in senior leadership.
Yeah.
That's the cynical side.
Yeah. Can you see a better future for the church?
I think the Justice, Dignity and Solidarity report is a starting point. My fear is that once, you know, we've got these groups set up and things like that and monitoring and X, Y and Z, that actually we've not got a plan where that goes. I'm sure I would be proved wrong by those people who've written the report and involved, but as I see it, I'm not sure. I think one of the real issues for me also is that within the life of the church, we tend to hear just the voices who have had really bad experiences of the church,
yeah,
kind of thing. And I want to actually be able to say, well, what about those who have had good experiences because of their colour?
Mm-hmm.
Where did they encourage and where did those get the voice? And sometimes that's a tricky thing to do.